you're listening to the Civil Service Pride On podcast. The 8th of March is International Women's Day. So this week, the Civil Service LGBT Plus Network will be speaking to lesbian, gay and bisexual women from across the civil service. We will be finding out more about their successful careers, but also discussing gender inequality and stereotypes at work. We will also be discussing increasing lesbian and bi visibility, as well as how colleagues can be good allies. My name is Leah, one of the Network Vice Chairs, and I will be your host for this episode. Today, we will be speaking with our guest Freya, who is a scientist in the UK Climate Resilience Team at the Met Office. Freya has a doctorate in ocean science and co-founded the Women in Climate Network at the University of Exeter. Hello, Freya. A big welcome. You're our first podcast for International Women's Day, so really looking forward to this. Really looking forward to find out more about your work around climate change and your involvement with LGBT plus and women networks.
I'm very excited to be here.
So to start with, and to get to know you a little bit more, can you tell us a bit more about your job role at the Met Office that you're in at the moment?
Yes, so I'm a scientist at the Met Office working in a team called UK Climate Resilience. So I look at how climate change is going to affect a range of UK sectors. And I'm particularly looking at a type of climate event called compound events, which basically happens when more than one thing happens at the same time or in close succession. So it's a really exciting area of science to be working in.
Sounds really interesting. I know you have a PhD as well. Could you tell me a little bit more about your success in terms of education and university?
Yeah, so I went to Southampton to do oceanography for my undergraduate, and I stayed there to do a PhD as well. I was looking for a subject that was quite applied science and very multidisciplinary appealed to me. So I got to study physics and chemistry. And then in my PhD, I went on to learn more about how the oceans play a part in climate change. It's been a really interesting journey. And I'm very lucky to have had a lot of great support in that along the way.
Yeah, it sounds a really interesting area to study. And do you think you are where you expected to be in your career at this point, or how is it different to how you expected?
It's actually exactly where I hoped it would be, and this was really what I was aiming for a long time. I really always looked at the Met Office as a great place to work. There's a lot of benefits around being a scientist in the civil service, with a lot of job security compared to in academia, where there's a lot of short-term contracts. Yeah. And there's a great community of scientists at the Met Office. And so when I was actually doing my undergraduate at the University of Southampton, I did an internship at the Met Office, which gave me insight into what it was like to work here. So from that time, which was nearly 10 years ago now, I knew I wanted to end up working at the Met Office permanently. So it's really worked out well that I've actually been able to achieve that and get to where I wanted to be.
Well, that's amazing. Congratulations on reaching your goals.
Thank you. I feel very lucky that it's worked out in that way. Obviously, there's a lot of hard work went into that, but there's always a little bit of luck as to when jobs come up and things like that. So I'm really glad it worked out.
As you said, you sound like you really enjoy working in the Met Office, but throughout your journey in education and in your job now, have you found that science is a more dominated role by men?
Yeah, particularly as I work with more climate colleagues who maybe come from maths and physics backgrounds, that side particularly is more male dominated. Whereas when I was working in oceanography, there was more of a balance, and from subjects like geography, there's more of a balance. So there's a lot of different ways that feed into climate science. So when we look at younger scientists in the Met Office, there's actually quite good gender diversity. But what we do see is that drop off as you go to more senior levels. So the leaky pipeline, which you see in a lot of male dominated professions, and we see fewer women at the very senior or expert roles. I'm really committed to trying to help provide a place in my Women in Climate network that we might talk a bit about later, where people feel supported, and we help make sure that people have the skills and resources to feel like they can succeed in the career, and then they have a network of people around them who will help them get there. Because I think it can be something that puts people off when they don't see role models in senior positions, and they don't see people in very senior management if they're aspiring to get to those levels. It really helps to see people that you identify with in those positions.
As you've already touched on, can you tell me a little bit more about your involvement with women and LGBT network?
Yes, for sure. So I mentioned the Women in Climate Network, which is something that I co-founded with Penny Maher at the University of Exeter when I was working there as a postdoc, 3 years ago now. And when I came to the Met Office, we've expanded it into a joint Met Office and University of Exeter network, which has been great. And we run lots of meetings, talking to different people about their careers, summer skills-based sessions. Recently, we've done a lot of sessions looking at equality, diversity and inclusion. So we do a real range of things. I'm also involved with the PRISM network, which is obviously based in the city of Exeter and is a science LGBT plus network. And we also have an LGBT plus network at the Met Office as well. So all of these are great places for people to come together and hear about interesting science other people do. So that really showcases a lot of great work of women and LGBT scientists, but also gives a support network and helps people be aware of other people in similar positions around them and how they feel. Because often when you're a minority, you may not be that open about some of your experiences, and it can be quite hard to connect to some of the people that share your experiences. But it's often a very helpful and validating thing to meet those other people who work in similar types of workplaces to you. So I think these networks are really important for that.
What actually influenced you to start up your own network?
I think we really felt that we wanted to have something that was a little bit more regular than sometimes like these awareness days like the one today. And there was obviously events at the university that would come up about around those days, but we didn't feel that was enough to really create a network of people who knew each other and could support each other. And also we wanted to see different types of events and get more discussions that were really specific to our niche area of climate science. That's really what drove us to start a new network. And I think that things that spring out in more local areas can be really helpful, because often people like to attend networks where they already know a few people.
Do you think that the role model aspect is work, and do you think that people are finding that useful through your network?
Yes, I think so. And I think when we hear more about people's lives and experiences, as well as what they've achieved, then it really helps to humanize them. And so that's one of the things that I've found most useful, and I think others have found the same, is that when you, for example, talk to a professor who's a woman about their experiences, you gain more of an insight into the path. And actually, this is true for men as well, for anybody's story, to really hear when people come from their backgrounds and what they've achieved. If you hear those stories from people with similar kinds of backgrounds, then it really helps you realize that it is a path that is open to you as well. Not always helpful, obviously, to hear about a path of someone who's very privileged, who has achieved, you know, who may have achieved a lot, but they don't recognize the privilege that helped them in that. So it's really important, I think, to showcase people from different areas which are more of a minority. So as I'm a woman who comes from a relatively sort of low to medium socioeconomic backgrounds, and I've really realized going through my career that a lot of my peers have come from very privileged backgrounds, maybe from private schools, from women's schools, and things that weren't open to my family due to cost. So I think that that is important for those of us. It is possible, and sometimes it's harder, but it's possible. Yeah. So we shouldn't we need to recognize the privilege, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, hopefully your story will inspire someone else as well. So do you see your diversity work and climate work as interlinked?
I really do, yes. We have, when we consider climate change, something that is disproportionately actually impacting women across the globe. Climate change is referred to by the US Defence and by Catherine Hayhoe, who's a great climate scientist and communicator in the US, as a threat multiplier. So all the inequalities that we see around the world be multiplied. So climate change may be affecting women, ethnic minorities, obviously more than it may affect those with more privilege. But at the same time, there's a lot of hope around climate solutions which really empower women. So there's a lot of work there showing how women can really be this key to some of the changes that we need to make in the world. There is a close tie there between women's rights around the world and climate change. So I think that's something really important, which personally drives me. And when we think about the worlds that we want to live in future, I think that social justice is very much tied with environmental justice. And so climate change work really to provide the underpinning science which allows people to make the decisions around this is really important part of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You've already kind of touched on role models, but is there anything else you think that civil service or local networks such as the Met Office, LGBT and Women Network could do to improve equality and diversity in the office more?
Yeah, so as you say, we've talked a lot about increased visibility and that important role of a support network. But also I think networks have a really important place in challenging anything in the workplace that isn't as inclusive as it could be. So we're all on a journey to make our workplaces more inclusive, and the civil service is doing great work in this, leading a way that other organisations can follow. And I think thinking about the intersectionality aspect between women's networks and LGBT, it's really important for women's networks to really truly be inclusive of lesbian or trans colleagues. For example, at the Women in Climate Network, actually everyone is welcome to our meetings, regardless of how they identify with gender, which also helps remind people that making sure that our workplaces are inclusive of minorities is not just a problem for the minority themselves, it's a problem that everybody should be trying to address.
Yeah, so there are men who are able to come to your networks as well to be allies.
Yes, exactly. And I think there is a really important role for active allies in all of this. And often when allies challenge things, that can actually affect change quicker in some cases than when it's a minority. So I really encourage people to think about how they can be allies, for example, using pronouns so that it's made a norm for people to do so. There's a lot of great guidance on the LGBT civil service website actually around this.
Yeah.
I encourage people to look there about the other things that you could do and try and think about how you can become more comfortable both challenging other people and yourself, just to make sure that comments or microaggressions is something that, you know, we all slip up on from time to time, assuming that other people have the same life or view as we do. And so it can be easy to say things that can be quite upsetting and offensive to people. So it's really up to us all to challenge ourselves and others on that, just so we can make it inclusive for everyone.
Yeah. There were some really good points, and I think we all need to kind of do more and think more in terms of allyship. What barriers have you faced due to your sexuality and or gender in work?
So I feel quite lucky, I think, that coming from a subject area where there was quite a good diversity in terms of gender, has made me feel more comfortable in that respect. Although looking to senior levels, as I say, it's, you know, in my own work founding, the network actually really helps me overcome it, because I feel I can put in place sessions that actually really help myself and others in feeling more like I have the skill set to achieve. In terms of sexuality, I think I'm quite lucky now. Obviously, in the civil service is a very LGBTQ friendly environment, so I feel comfortable being out. I feel sometimes like we still have this slight cautiousness about being totally open compared to heteronormative sort of colleagues who might have quite different home lives to queer colleagues. And so it does always feel slightly like sometimes you are hiding a part of who you are. So I think it is really important to work towards an environment where everyone feels comfortable in bringing themselves to work, and being able to sort of be honest with colleagues about their home lives.
Yeah. Do you find that it can sometimes be uncomfortable, or that you have to continuously come out at work?
Yeah, I think it's something that you're always thinking more about. So there's always that sort of additional burden about considering how open you want to be, and you're always thinking about these things. Whereas that's maybe not something that everybody has to do. So it's a sort of a slightly additional burden always to evaluate what you want to disclose to people.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, as I say, the civil service and the Met Office is really a great environment to feel very safe doing that. And there are lots of colleagues who are quite openly out, and that's really great to see.
Yeah, so there is that visibility and support around you, which is great.
Yes.
So obviously we're kind of living in a pandemic at the moment. So I wanted to kind of end and ask you two questions. How do you think COVID has set women back in the workplace? And also, how do you think COVID has impacted on LGBT plus people and families differently to others?
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting thoughts around this. And I think anecdotally from discussions and what we see in the news about research on this, that there is definitely impacts on on both of these groups. Women often are taking more childcare responsibilities and responsibilities around the home compared to men. So people will often, I think, it either be working fewer hours. So although there are lots of great situations now where colleagues are sharing that with partners, it's certainly, I think, this general trend towards women having more of that labour and therefore feeling under a lot more pressure and harder, it's harder to achieve at work. It's obviously been difficult for everyone. It's a question of support networks, really, in during this COVID pandemic, and a lot of LGBTQ people rely on support networks outside of their homes, and it's obviously been a lot harder to access those. So we can go online, but a lot of people don't find that online support is quite the same as in-person support. So that's definitely something that I think is affecting the LGBT community, obviously across the population as well as in the LGBTQ community. There's a lot of mental health issues being exacerbated at the moment, so there's certainly a lot of impact on various minorities as well as everyone. But that they might be, again, like climate change, COVID is kind of a threat multiplier. And I think it's important to recognise that there might be all these reasons why minorities may be affected slightly more. So I'm sure there'll be lots of research on this coming out over the years.
Yeah, are you looking forward to being able to see your networks in person again?
Yes, I certainly have struggled with online connecting. It's great in some ways that we can meet with people around the world, but on a personal level, maintaining connections with people and also building new connections is actually quite hard compared to in person. Mm-hmm. So I'll be looking forward to meeting people in real life again.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too far off. Thank you very much for joining me today and for sharing your thoughts and your experiences.
Thanks very much for having me.
That's it for today's episode. We hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you to Freya for joining us today. Please keep an eye out for our other episodes for International Women's Day this week, where we will continue conversations about gender and sexuality in the workplace. If you're not already, you can subscribe to this podcast on all mainstream platforms. You can also find out more information about the Civil Service LGBT Plus Network, including news and events, on our website at civilservice.lgbt. For all our latest updates, you can also follow us on Twitter at CSLGBT, on Instagram at CivilServiceLGBT, or visit facebook.com/CivilServiceLGBT. Until next time, thank you for listening.